Okay, shall we get this show on the road?
Let's do it.
This is the podcast of the Germanic American Institute.
Welcome.
Willkommen.
Where Germanic-speaking European countries...
Germany.
Deutschland.
Austria.
Österreich.
Switzerland.
Schweiz.
Blend with the Midwestern United States.
Hallo. Hallo.
Servus.
Grüezi.
We are here and there, and we invite you to come along on the journey. Welcome back to another episode of Here and There, the podcast of the Germanic American Institute. Today, we are reaching across the pond from St. Paul into the motherland, to Germany. We are collaborating for the first time ever on this podcast, and we have reached out to two Americans in Germany drinking whiskey. That really is the name of their podcast. Alex and Josh, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi. It's actually Jeff.
Jeff, good enough. Sorry, it's the whiskey. It's the whiskey speaking. We started early.
That's what happens.
Let's start with the most important questions. Americans in Germany drinking whiskey. Before I even dive into why are you there and how did you get to whiskey, what are you drinking?
So we are drinking, it's a German whiskey, which we found out there's actually a lot of German whiskeys, for those of you who do not know.
Yeah, it turns out there's actually more whiskey distilleries in Germany than there are in Scotland. So think about that. It's surprising. Unfortunately, most of them don't ship internationally, so that's why you really don't see them.
It's a good pub quiz fact, yeah. But we're drinking Black Forest Wild Whiskey, and it's... probably from the Black Forest. I'm assuming it's from the Black Forest. I don't know. I didn't do much research on this one, but that's what we're drinking.
Without turning you into absolute connoisseurs with an educated opinion that stands the Michelin Guide sort of test of time, how would you describe what you're drinking right now?
Let me take one more sip.
It's a little sipperoo. It's sweet.
It's really flavorful.
Yeah,
it's sweet, but with like a spiciness at the end, mm-hmm. I would say.
A little fruity.
Yeah, not too long of a burn. It's a pretty quick burn, but it has like this spiciness that I like, kind of like a rum spiciness.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there an American...
It's got a nice dark color to it. It's pretty. Yeah.
Is there an American counterpart to this? Anything that you could compare to in the U.S. Shelves?
Oh my. It's maybe kind of got like a rye-ish flavor.
Ooh, I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't go that far.
Okay.
Yeah. actually, I would say, what's that one Canadian whiskey? Pike Creek, is it?
Pike Creek. Oh, yes.
I think it kind of tastes like that.
So it's a little Pike Creek.
German version of Pike Creek.
It's got a little creaky going on.
Yeah.
You're already throwing names around that I don't even
know where to come from. Oh, yeah. These aren't real whiskeys. We're just...
Oh, it's my mom's whiskeys.
Just so everyone knows, we are not whiskey experts. We weren't before we started our podcast.
No.
We still are not.
And we still are not. I think a lot of people think that we are, but we drink, you know, like a glass or three every Wednesday when we record. So it's not like, you know, we're drinking these whiskeys for a long time and know them. You drink it 1 week and then the next one comes and then you kind of...
And then eventually, like a couple months down the road, maybe you drink a little bit again.
Right.
But yeah, the 1 day a week we actually drink whiskey is for the podcast. So we're not just, you know, for breakfast every day having a scotch or anything like that.
On most days, yeah.
It does make recording a little bit easier. By the way, the time of our recording here is 12:45 p.m. local time. So well into the evening for our German counterparts here, or American-German counterparts here. And I think this is the first time I'm getting away with drinking on a job. I'm having Bowman Brothers Virginia Straight Bourbon small batch. And Aaron is the one person that's responsible.
Okay, fine. I'm going to go get one. Now I feel bad.
Oh, no, we pressured her into it. Oh, man. Oh, I feel bad.
I love it.
But Gunther, I mean, it's afternoon, so technically it's lunchtime. So I think
true.
Whiskey with lunch, that's...
I mean, it's totally fine. Yeah. We also have a nice selection of German beers here with us.
We've got North and South. What do you
mean? We have North and South. I'm drinking a Berliner Kindle right here in the local brewery of Berlin.
Yeah, and I'm drinking a Bayreuther, which I would assume is from Bavaria. And it is.
So you are mixing and matching. But let me ask you the all-important question then, of course, that results from that. With two Americans being in Germany, how did you even come up with the idea to just dive into whiskey and then, I suppose, talk about Germany and the idiosyncrasies compared to the U.S.? So how did this come about?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, because actually, I would say for people who've never heard our show, the whiskey portion is only accounts for maybe 10% of the right. of each episode. Like, we focus more on expat experiences in Germany, traveling around Germany, you know, weird stories of living in Germany, that sort of thing. And the whiskey element is just kind of the extra, you know, the icing on the cake kind of a deal.
Yeah, so the idea popped up when we were at a beer garden for his girlfriend's birthday, actually. And we were just talking about how much we love living here and all the experiences that we've had. And at that point, I've been in Germany for around 6.5 years and Jeff for, what, 8 or 9?
Yeah. About, yeah.
And they're like, you guys should make a podcast about this. You both have good voices. You have good stories. You should do it. And we thought, all right, yeah, I guess we could. I don't know, maybe, whatever. We'll talk about it another time. And then we kind of mulled the idea over for the next few weeks. But then we thought we kind of need, there's a lot of podcasts out there for people who want to move or people who have moved. So we thought we need kind of like a little bit of a gimmick to make it a little bit different than the rest. So we said, let's just drink whiskey while we do it and get different bottles of whiskey every week. Little do we think about how expensive whiskey is. that was a big mistake.
Yeah. A huge portion of our budget is the whiskey budget. Yeah.
Like 80% of our budget is whiskey.
Yeah. I love it.
But yeah. Honestly, I'm really glad we added that element, because it just adds an extra bit of fun to every episode.
Like, and also loosens you up a bit too. It makes it easier to record when you add a little whiskey in you know?
True. Be a little bit more honest, you know?
Yeah. Yes.
However, you guys have got to be the only ones that I have ever run into who can use whiskey as a business expense. Bravo.
Thank you. Yeah.
And that is true.
We've also had some amazing listeners who have sent us some bottles or donated some money so we can get some whiskeys when we don't have a sponsor. So, we have some really fantastic listeners who've helped us out a lot, because without them, we couldn't afford to record anymore.
Sure.
Yeah. But it is amazing to have somebody that's just helping you drink like delicious whiskey.
Yes,
basically. Yeah.
Let's one quick touchdown on the last to join the circle of whiskey drinkers. Erin, what did you just grab?
Yes.
Okay. So this is what I found in my pantry. Basil Hayden's.
Ooh, never heard of that.
Kentucky Straight.
It is a bourbon whiskey. It is from Frankfort, Kentucky.
Wow. Another little connection there.
Combination, yeah.
And it says it has a spicy finish. So
I love a good spicy finish. I do love how your wine cellar includes whiskey. That's an amazing wine cellar.
Oh, I actually pulled this from our kitchen pantry, the wine.
Oh, now the whiskey didn't make it all the way to the cellar? Okay, fair enough.
I think it's because my husband drinks it, so it's like it's like next to the Cheerios.
You have the two important things.
Good breakfast.
Yeah.
Cheerios. Cheers. Yeah, start
cheers.
Mixing it.
Cheers once again.
Cheers.
Very nice. It's nice to drink with people.
Yeah. Thanks for having us, guys.
So, gentlemen. You know, when I teach classes, I always try to somehow bring in some of the things that stand out to me. But having been in the U.S. for a little over 20 years now, 22 years almost to be exact, I think I may have lost a little bit of ground with how Germany and Austria and Switzerland have changed over the last 2 decades. When you just reach into your little satchel of knowledge, what stands out immediately as just a really significant difference between the U.S. and Germany these days?
Oh, wow. There's so much intersectional to choose. You want to go first?
Oh, God. Well, I guess kind of like you said, we've just been gone for a decade now. I've been here for almost 8 years. So I feel like when I talk about the States, I'm talking from a perspective from like 2012, 2013.
Sure.
A lot has happened in the United States since I've been gone. And I feel like Germany's kind of, at least in my experience in the past few years, has kind of been more or less the same. Well, not like much has changed here.
But it probably has. You just don't notice it.
You just don't notice it because you're
thinking it,
you know?
I mean, for me, the biggest difference that you see, even if you just visit for a week or your stay for a decade, is kind of just the cultural difference in terms of how people interact with you. You know, I mean, you know, living in the States, you can have a complete stranger walk up to you at any moment and start a conversation that'll last 20 minutes about like a really deep subject that with a person you never met. Whereas in Germany, people are much more standoffish. They stay to themselves. If you were to like go up to a group of Germans and just start talking to them, they'd be wondering like, what does he want? What is he selling? What's happening right now? They'd be much more on guard. So I think that's the biggest difference, is just how people interact or don't interact with, people in public, I'd say.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the biggest one. It's noticeable immediately, like right off the plane, mm-hmm. of just how different Germans are, for better or for worse, just very different than Americans are. And I think there's definitely positives to it and also some negatives, especially sure. if you're a new person to the country. It can be difficult to, you know, meet people and make friends because yeah. you think everyone hates you and doesn't want to talk to you, which could be true. I don't know. But
I do believe there's quite some truth to that. We're a little more, let's just call it reserved. I'm not exactly sure that we're standoffish, I suppose. I mean, that must be the Germans, the Austrians, definitely not. but I wonder, you know, whether it really is more challenging to get to know us, really, really get to know us, you know, not just having this 20-minute, 30-minute conversation. Right. Whereas yeah. I found, and that's my recollection, if you will, that once you truly get to know someone in Germany, that's almost you're included in the family. Versus...
Very true.
Yeah. I think that's 100% correct. We've talked about this on an episode before where we compared it to like Germans kind of like an onion. You got to peel back some layers, you know? And once you're like in the center, you are, like you said, your family. And it's hard to get through the layers and it takes some time, which I think is nice because once, like I have a lot of German friends, like we will be friends forever. And you know that. And it's, I don't know how I know it, but it's some kind of, it's a different feeling. And I feel like in the States, I had a lot of people who I knew who were like friends, but maybe weren't as close as, say, a lot of the German people that I know.
Right.
If that makes sense.
They were friends, but wouldn't necessarily be there when you actually needed somebody.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I would say maybe go as far to say Germans have like a little bit of a trust issues, I think. So they want to see you more often, see you multiple events or dinners or whatever to really kind of like figure you out, you know, and see, do I trust this person? Like, are we compatible? And they put more time into it before they really let you join their friend group. Whereas in the States, it kind of happens immediately, but it's not, like you said, not necessarily the relationship happens quickly, but not necessarily a strong relationship.
Right. Yeah. Like it happens all the time, at least when I was in college and things like that, where you meet people, you're best friends for 2 weeks. And you're kind of like, we don't actually get along at all. We have nothing in common. Why are we even friends? And Germany, it's like the opposite. It's we have nothing in common. Let's see what we have in common over some time. And then maybe we'll build a fantastic relationship together.
Yeah. And I think the problem for a lot of expats, especially coming from America, is they don't know this. So they come and they put in the one-time meeting and they're like, okay, this person doesn't like me, and they don't try again. And then they're wondering why they're having trouble making friends. And they say like things like, oh, but Germans are rude or whatever, which isn't true.
Not true at all.
They just don't realize like that you have to put in more of an effort to break through, especially if you're an expat, you know, because, when you move to Germany, Germans, they have their friend groups already. They have their careers. You're the newcomer. So you kind of have to, put in the effort. I don't necessarily think they will.
Right. Especially if you're speaking English and they are speaking more German.
Right. Makes it harder.
In Berlin, maybe not as big of a problem, but I'm assuming in other places in Germany, it's a little more difficult.
You guys, how did you learn German? Did you learn German like when you got there or before you moved?
Yeah. I thought, hey, I'm going to go to Germany. I'm not going to take any classes before, you know. I'm going to learn it through integration. And that didn't work in, like, even a little bit, like nothing. So then I started going to classes twice a week after work for an hour and a half each day, and then practice with my friends, with my girlfriend. And that was difficult. I wish I would have had taken the time either before or when I first landed, when I had a few months without a job, to do like an intensive course and get it done, because it was over years where I got to a level where I can speak proficiently. And that was a lot of time that I kind of feel like I wasted because I, you know, I have to work. I had to go to German class instead of, you know, meeting people and experiencing the city more.
There's a trade-off there, huh?
Definitely trade-off. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I knew I had learned on my own a little bit in the States. When I was, I can't remember, 16 or 17, I had an Austrian girlfriend. She's an exchange student. And so of course, you know, you want to like, you know, press a little bit. So, exactly. Not for that. And she's from, Klagenfurt, if you know where Klagenfurt is.
I used to live there.
Then there you go. So of course, like, you know, on the weekend, sometimes I bought like a German CD and kind of learned on my own, but you know, enough to, you know, count to 20 and, you know, like, but even that is a nice foundation, to start with. And then eventually when I was, 21, I moved to Vienna for a few months just to take German courses, just as a, yeah, which Vienna is an awesome city, by the way. I moved there for a few months just for fun, just to take some German classes, see what Europe's all about. And then eventually decided to stay. But kind of the same as Alex, I went to German classes only for a few months, and then kind of my, you know, my cash reserves dwindled a bit, and, you know, had to look for a job at this point. So then I kind of focused more on that. And then that was kind of my last formal schooling, and all the other German learning I did was, yeah, over the years, through work, just kind of, you know, working with other Germans and hearing words and writing them down and going home and, you know, look at what they're talking about, looking that up and, you know, mm-hmm. listening to CDs, that kind of a thing. But I wish I just sat down, took, you know, intensive courses for 6 months. Just,
yeah, that would have been the best idea.
Just did
so
it.
You chose the by far more challenging path, I would say, just really hoping that immersion is going to kick in and somehow you're going to head first dive into this. Yeah. So,
and I think especially in Berlin, it's just not a good way to do that.
But did you come to understand Germans in the way that they met you and welcomed you to be perhaps different because you didn't speak German to, let's say, some level of proficiency? Did you feel that they treat you differently as opposed to the people who came there as expats speaking German? Do you have any experience with that?
I mean,
any ideas?
I can remember many, many times during my first year or so living in Germany when I'd go to a party or a dinner, you know, with friends, meeting people. And the first question the Germans would ask would be, oh, how long have you lived in Germany? And if you say any time beyond 6 months,
I know what you're gonna say.
They're very disappointed because you're obviously speaking English to them, and they'll actually say, "Oh, really? Been here a year and you don't speak German?"
Is
like
German yet?
Like a very kind of
a little judgy. They mean maybe really judgy.
And that's not everybody, but I encountered it many times to the point where people asked, "You know, how long have you been here?" I just didn't want to answer. You almost wanted to lie and be like, "Oh, I just got here." But there was also plenty of Germans who didn't care, you know. They're actually interested, like, oh, you're from the States, you know, and they're interested in that, and they you know, you meet them that way because there are people who like to travel and they're interested in that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think I had more of that. I did have the people, of course, how long have you been here, why don't you speak German yet? But I think for the most part, I think most people that I met in my first few months months were actually super friendly and welcoming, and of course a lot of them I'm not friends with anymore because, you know, things change in 8 years. But I had a really good experience because I knew the stereotype of people like, oh yeah, Germans are kind of mean and standoffish and maybe rude. And I didn't get that at all. And I was waiting to meet someone who was.
Yeah.
And I really didn't. I was like, these people are really like super nice, actually. And I don't understand where the stereotype came from. And I still really don't, to be honest.
Why Berlin? That was like my question. And I have to apologize. I've listened to, I think at this point, like 10 of your episodes. But one thing I was wondering was why Berlin, of all the places in Germany? Like, did you start out in Berlin, or how did you get to that city in particular? Because I'm also, as Gunter knows, and other people who listen to the podcast, like, I'm obsessed with Berlin, and I will talk about it all the time. So here are my people. Tell me.
and I have never been to Berlin, so there's that too.
Oh, wow. Oh, interesting. That's a crying shame. Go ahead. All right, so I have a pretty interesting story of why I came to Berlin. And so before moving here, I've never been to Europe before, or really anywhere. I really didn't travel much. I went to like Canada and like Mexico when I was like 10 years old, but I never really traveled at all. And I had a friend from college who was a year, a grade above me. And so my senior year of college, she was living in Berlin. And I just graduated, and me and my long-term girlfriend broke up. And I was working at a pizza place living with my parents, like not really doing what I wanted to be doing in my life. And she just kind of messaged me one night talking about how she just left the club at 6 a.m. and it was so early and her friends were making fun of her. I'm like, where are you? That sounds crazy. Because where I'm from, like everything closed at 1 o'clock anyways. And she's like, oh yeah, I'm in Berlin. I'm like, oh yeah, Berlin. Like that's Germany, right? Like, yeah, it's Germany, idiot. You should totally come on over. Come move here with me. And I was joking. I was like, yeah, haha, find me a job. And I'm a kindergarten teacher. I graduated as one. And she's like, there's plenty of kindergarten jobs here. And I was like, really? And she told me, yeah. And then, you know, I kind of thought about it for a day or two. Because like I said, I really wasn't where I wanted to be in life at the time. I was 22 years old. Really no attachments to anything at that point. And yeah, so the next day I kind of talked to her again. I was like, you serious? Like, yeah, you can live with me. You get a 3-month visa. You don't have to worry about anything. Just to pay some rent. So I was like, all right. So I saved up money, as much money as I could, bought a one-way ticket for October 1st, 2013. And yeah, saved up my money for the summer and told my mom, I was like, mom, by the way, I think I want to move to Germany. And she looked at me in the eyes, which I didn't expect this because I come from a Jewish family and Jewish mother's a little overbearing sometimes. And she's like, I can see that happening. And I was like, all right, then I'll buy a ticket, seal of approval. And she did not know I was going to be staying here forever. But yeah, I bought a one-way ticket, found a job, and yeah, here I am.
So Jeff, before we move on to you and your little synopsis of how you actually ended up in Crazy Town, Alex, going with a tourist visa limited to 90 days and having a little bit of money saved up very much has this sort of adventure and vacation flavor. The switch from a tourist visa to actually getting the permission to stay and work, I think that is commonly the missing thread, if you will, the missing explanation for many people who will eventually consider to do something similar. How did you go about that?
So I found a job in a kindergarten that was a 40-hour contract. So it was a full-time job as a teacher of English in a bilingual environment. And so after I got the job, they had to sponsor me for a visa and I had to go to the what's now known as the Landesamt für Einwanderung, which is the immigration office. They changed the name to make it sound more nice because it's a really awful place. I mean, it's for everyone listening, it is a scary place, but you got to get over it. If you're moving, like it's a scary place.
Yeah.
But you know, that's how it's kind of like your how you earn your stripes to live here. And so they had to sponsor me and I had to go in there with my work contract, with my something called Anmeldung. For those who do not know or listening, it's like your registration to your apartment and a bunch of other documents that they showed me on the website and just hope that they approve my visa. And luckily they did because I had a job that no German or European, unless at the time you were from the UK, could do because no one could be a native English speaker unless you're from a native English country. So for me, it worked out pretty nicely. And that was a visa for as long as my contract was, which was 6 months. And then I had a year contract, so I had a year visa, and then another 6 months contract, another 6 month visa until I had in Germany an unlimited contract up to 2 years. And then I got another like 3 year visa, and then another 2 year, and now I'm on a unlimited visa. So now I'm like here for good, finally. Got that a few months ago, big deal.
Got that permanent residency.
Got that permanent residency, yeah. Which is the best feeling.
So similar to the American green card.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not a citizen. I can't vote, but I can be here forever. And I can also live outside of Germany in the EU for like 12 months, I believe.
Okay.
If I want to.
Jeff, memory lane. How did that all come about?
Yeah, I mean, I was a bit different than Alex because I was really into traveling before I moved to Germany. And I couldn't even honestly tell you why, but when I was a teenager, I just had interest in Germany. So I like watched a lot of travel documentaries about Germany and Europe in general. And then when I graduated high school, I went on several really long backpacking trips through Europe, you know, 1 month, 2 month backpacking trips, fell in love with it, fell in love with Germany, you know, went through Hamburg and Munich and Berlin and everywhere. And and then eventually I was just like, okay, every year you go on a different backpacking trip, just try and live there for a few months, see what happens, you know? So I was like, okay, I'll go do the language course in Vienna for a few months. And originally I was going to go to Munich, but found out how much it actually costs to live in Munich. And it's like, okay, Vienna's actually just as nice and much cheaper. So at least at the time, I don't know what it is now. So I moved to Vienna, which I love. And yeah, did the language course for a few months. And then eventually I was just like, yeah, I don't really want to go home. And I made a really, really rookie mistake where, see how it is with the American tourist visa, you can stay for 90 days, right? I got confused. I didn't know it was 90 days in the EU. I thought it was 90 days per country. I made a mistake there.
That's a huge mistake.
Yeah, do your research, guys.
26 countries later.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be a terrible deal for them.
It sounds completely stupid. I don't even know where my thinking was back then. But anyway, so I stayed in Vienna, Vienna for a while. And then eventually I was like, there's no jobs here. Like, jobs for expats are not really overflowing in Austria. You know, it's a smaller country. And I really just met a guy at a party in Vienna from Berlin. And he said, come to Germany. It's much bigger. And there's plenty of jobs for expats in Berlin. Just check it out. I'd never been to Berlin before. But I was like, sounds good. So I moved there and I was there for a few months until I found out the reality of the tourist visa, which really crushed me because I wanted to stay. I wanted to get a job. But I thought, okay, there's no way they're going to give me a visa if I've overstayed my tourist visa. I tried everything. One day when my dad was visiting me, I sent him to a local police station just to ask them because I was afraid to ask myself if I asked myself and, you know, I'm admitting a crime, they just
get arrested,
lock me up. Yeah. But eventually I realized, okay, it's this is no good. But you know what? I'm going to go back to the U.S., reset everything, save up money for a year, and then come back to Berlin proper after I do the good research, save up the money, you know, do things right. So I ended up moving back to, left all my stuff in somebody's cellar in Berlin, moved back to the States for about a year and a half, I think, and then officially moved to Berlin in, May 2011. And here we go, still here.
Yes.
Eventually found work, and wow, there you go.
What a journey.
It's wild to think back about it because, you know, we've talked about this a bunch in the podcast, and some people ask us when we meet them for new, but like, it is really bizarre after such a long time where you move to feels like really home. And thinking about the stories before, like, would I make that decision nowadays? I don't think I would have, to be honest. Mm. But I did at that point because it's a perfect time and place. I don't know. It's weird thinking about it.
And you're at that age where it's like, this is the time. If you're gonna do something like this, this is the time.
True.
And there was no plan to do that or to stay to Germany for 10 years.
No.
You were just thinking like one step at a time. Like, okay, let's try Vienna. Oh, okay. Let's
try Berlin. Very short-term plans.
And even when I moved officially to Berlin, I wasn't planning on staying long. I was just like, you know, I really just want to try it out for a year or two. That was my plan. Let's do a year or two, see if I can make things happen. And I don't know, just, yeah, time goes by and then.
I plan 100% just to move. I didn't really think about like how long. I was going to move and see what happens.
So what is home now? Is home Germany? Is home the U.S.? How do you feel?
Ooh, that's it. Depends who I'm talking to. I'm talking to my mom. It's in the States. No, it's a very complicated question. I think kind of also a philosophical question.
Absolutely.
I feel home here because I've spent all of my adult life here. And my girlfriend is here and I have an apartment here. And like, this feels like home now. And it's come to the point when I do go back to the States, I almost feel like a tourist. And that's a bizarre feeling, like in my own hometown, because I see things have changed and I don't really recognize as much anymore. And also like when I go to dinner and like the waiter or waitress comes over and asks me, how's my food? I'm like, what? Can you not ask me this? You know, I'm at dinner or ask for like to card you for anything. Like, all these things feel now foreign to me. And unless I'm like in my childhood home, then it feels like a warm blanket, you know? It feels like a really like a nice, tight, warm blanket. But I'm also very excited when I come back to Berlin again. So I don't. Here is home, but it's a complicated question.
Oh, it's such a tough question.
It yeah. really is.
For me, it's just I have two homes now. That's how I look at it. Yeah. Like, the U.S. will always be my home because I mean, it's where
it has to be.
I spent my entire childhood. Like, the U.S. culture is what I grew up on. You know what I mean? So, like, so much of me is that. But then you also have the past 10 years of living in Germany, so I have a mix of that as well. So,
which is like a third of your life.
Exactly. So, but yeah, I'm the same as you. Is when I fly back to Germany from visiting states, like, that is going home, because I mean that's where my actual house is. That's where my house is. That's where my girlfriend is. That's where
every day. Yeah.
That's where my job is. That's where everything. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I have both those things going on where I arrive in the States and it almost feels like you never left. Like, oh wow, yeah, like,
yeah,
back in California, back with my parents. But then there's also that same thing where you ride around and everything feels a little off just because you're not used to it.
It's kind of like a dream. You know, in a dream where like something's familiar but it seems really different at the same time. That's kind of the feeling, but in reality, and it's very hard to explain that. In the first few years, I didn't feel that way, but now after so much time, it gets weirder and weirder every single time. It's, yeah.
Would you ever consider moving back for good?
Me, I consider anything, but I will probably not move back. I think the quality of life that I have here, I really enjoy, and I think that kind of the culture of the city really vibes with who I am as a person. And I haven't found that anywhere else in the world, really. And yeah, this is definitely where I'm going to be probably until I'm dead. But again, who knows? Like, you never know what's going to happen in the future.
Plus, he recently bought a house, so he's probably here for a while.
Yeah, well, an apartment, not a house.
Or sorry.
Yeah,
no, I mean, a condo. Whatever.
I do have a very long contract where I'm legally bound to pay for a very long time,
for like 30 years or something, you know, whatever.
Yeah, and you have to pay your own agent, right? As opposed to the U.S., where the agent is actually paid basically by the seller, if you will. In Germany, you have to pay your own.
We had no agent. We were lucky to have no agent. So, yeah, we were very lucky because it was a brand new building. We got an email, a newsletter, we reserved it. So we got very lucky with that. But yeah, that is a thing in Germany to pay your own agent. And we looked up if we did have an agent, how much it would have cost, and it's astronomical. It's stupid. I don't understand it. That's not my job. I don't choose an agent. Why should I pay for you? But we were lucky not to have one this time.
Absolutely.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So just to fill our U.S. listening and educated audience in, the difference between the U.S. and Germany and Austrian real estate is really that you have your buyer or seller's representative agent, and usually the agent for the buyer gets essentially a commission split by the seller's agent. In Germany and Austria, it's inherently different. The seller pays their agent, the buyer pays their agent. Each one comes out of their own pocket, which can get costly pretty quickly.
A lot. And it's a pretty large percentage as well. So if you're getting a really big place, really expensive place, it's gonna cost you.
Yeah. I mean, it's great if you're an agent, though.
If you're an agent, it's fantastic.
Jeff, moving back, ever a thought?
Complicated. I'll say this. I have no plans to move back, but I also have no plans not to move back.
Oh. That's very, only, very that's committed.
Only, that's the only way I can
things like, say something was saying nothing.
Things, I never had the plan to be here as long as I have been here. So it's because I can't imagine never moving back, because I mean, the biggest thing for anyone who wants to be an expat is the missing your family and your friends and yes. having no contact with them and only seeing them once a year or with Corona and once every 2 years. That's pretty hard. And over time it gets a little bit harder, you know?
Absolutely.
I would like to say I want to move back at some point, but I currently have no plans to do so. So I'd say for the foreseeable future, for a few years, absolutely. I'm still here. Who knows? Maybe I will live here my whole life, but I think I would like to move back at some point. I mentioned when I met my girlfriend, I think in the first few weeks of dating, I let her know. I was like, just so you know, I don't plan on staying here forever, just to keep the door open, just in case, you know. But yeah, I don't know. I'm very much just seeing what happens. But again, I have my house here. I have my friends, yeah. my girlfriend here, my job, my work is here.
This guy's here.
Alex is here. Yeah. I'll be fine moving back. There are plenty of things I miss about the U.S., but I also have a great time here in Berlin. So that's tough.
I think for your listeners who are listening, I'm assuming a lot of them hope for like kind of a black and white answer for a lot of these questions. But There's everything is like, everything's gray all the time. Not just like the Berlin weather, but like really a lot of these questions, because they're, it's just, everything's more complicated when you move to another country.
And there's a lot of emotions pulling you in,
yeah,
in both directions. And it's hard to find out which pull is stronger, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Erin, would you move back to Berlin?
I would, yeah. I mean, now it's like I have a whole bunch of stuff. I have to get rid of like a lot of stuff. You know, like you got like a big house in America and like somehow you fill it with all kinds of stuff. So I don't even know, like the 20 packs of paper towels and all the toys and whatever. But yeah, I definitely miss it. I miss the art scene in Berlin. I miss my friends. I miss not driving. I like don't like driving, yeah, personally. Even in Minnesota, like driving's okay, but like I sometimes like I'm not paying attention. So I'd like to just like chill out on like the tram or just
not,
like
walk. Not driving is amazing. That's actually a really good point, because I think the thing that would hit me the hardest moving back to the States would be A, having to own a car, and B, being dependent on it.
Yeah.
Because living in Berlin, I take a train or cycle most everywhere, and I don't have to wait for anything. I don't have to pay insurance. I don't have to buy gas. And the worst thing is in Berlin, every time you come home, spending half an hour of your day trying to find a parking spot near your house. Whereas if you have a bike or you take the tram, whatever, you're just home, you know? So that would be tough having to drive everywhere. I got used to it, but it would be.
I also started reading more when I came to Berlin, because my commute to work, I can just sit down and read a book as opposed to, you know, driving a hunk of metal.
Like, all right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I used to be a big driver too. I'm so happy not to drive.
I mean, I do listen to podcasts like this one and here and there, but yeah, if I could find a job. And now that they don't call it the Ausländerbehörde anymore, it sounds much more welcoming. Right?
It is. They're actually a lot nicer too. They speak some English there too now. It's a better experience.
Yeah. The most bizarre thing ever was the last time, about a year ago, I went to renew my visa. And when I walked in, the woman in English said, "English or German?" Which blew me away, because they have never asked that before in the five other times over the years I've been. They go straight into German and they will refuse to speak English. But now I think they've changed. They're trying to actually, believe it or not, be welcoming to new people. So yeah, so like things are changing, guys. So this is probably the best time to move over, because it's probably the easiest it's ever been in terms of like the interaction at the immigration office.
Yeah. It's just paint the building though. It's still I don't know if it was when you were living here, but it's still very dark gray. Brutalist, scary-looking building.
Yeah, it looks like a Stasi prison or something from the outside.
It did. It was like, you like took a breath before you entered. You're like,
here we go.
Well, it's not much different with the American immigration, or now the Department of Homeland Security.
That makes sense.
You did mention the ease of getting from A to B by just simply hopping on a tram or using your bike. And then conversely, Erin doesn't want to drive, doesn't like to drive. This sounds like a little more of a stressful experience here in the U.S., driving, being dependent on your car, absolutely having to have one. Perhaps it's offset by not having to cruise the same building for 30 minutes to finally find a spot that you can somewhat squeeze into. But
yeah.
Either way, I think those two things bring about stress. Right, mm-hmm. They stress you out. But how would you compare with your American experience and the German experience, stress versus stress? What is stressful in Germany? What is stressful in the US for you guys?
That's a fun question. I'll bring up the big one that we actually mentioned the other day. Like when you live, this probably isn't just Germany, it's anywhere you're living abroad, you have the constant, you're always reminded of the fact that they do not have to let you be here. Like at any moment you could be deported or removed, or, you know, like you're exist, like when you back in the States where you are a citizen, you don't have to worry about anything. Like, you know, like there's nowhere for them to send me. I have to be, you know, but in Germany, it's like you worry. It's like even you commit one crime, you know, that they can choose, oh, well, we're going to, you know, cancel his visa, or you get, you know, any little thing you feel like, oh, if I do this paperwork wrong, I'm out of here, like, you know, or, you know, you're always constantly, even though it's kind of like an irrational fear, because, you know, they don't kick you out easily like that. But you, it's kind of like over, always over your head, where you're worried, like, this is not technically a permanent, like, you have a permanent residency, but it's not technically a permanent existence, you know, like,
right.
When's the other shoe going to drop, kind of feeling, you know?
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, yeah, even with residency, you still have, there's always in the back of my head, like, what if, I don't know, I'm falsely accused of murder or something. I don't know. That was a worst case scenario. Well, I know, it's ridiculous.
You might have bigger problems if
that's falsely accused. All right. Well, maybe something smaller, like a fake bond ticket or something. I don't know.
Okay. I experienced that, but yeah, okay.
But I think stress as well is in Germany, especially. I find a lot of things less stressful, even though it's in a different language. But especially like the work-life balance, I find here is incredible. How at 5 o'clock I'm out of work. And work can technically legally not even contact me, or at least I don't have to legally respond to them. And I know I can kind of, you know, just relax and do my thing. And 9 to 5 means 9 to 5. And in the States, it wasn't really like that. People kind of put pride into working long hours. And Germans are really prideful of like being done at 5 o'clock and enjoying their free time and having, you know, a beer after work. I mean, there's a word for it in German. For your listeners who don't know, there's a word for German for after work that's called Feierabend, which translates to party evening. And so after work, I'm like, hey, schön Feierabend, like have a beautiful party evening. I'm like, thanks, man, I will.
Even though your party evening is sitting at home watching Netflix.
Hey, but that's my evening, yeah. And that's my time. And yeah. I know when I'm done, that belongs to me. And I find that super special. And I love how very strict they are on that.
True. But I would say it depends on what, like in my job,
well,
the work never ends. So it's like, it's different, but yeah. So it depends on what you do.
For a 40-hour normal work job, then yeah.
So, yeah, but I mean, I think that's a good point though. Like that they do really respect that kind of, okay, no work calls after a certain time, no emails, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So 40 hours a week, then 6 weeks vacation or 5 respectively. Are we still doing the 13-14 salary thing per year?
What is that?
Oh, you don't. Well, let me make you a little more jealous, coming from the Austrian perspective. And I'm not exactly sure if this still holds a lot of water, but I do believe it still does in some industries, at least given the job postings that I'm seeing, that we get paid once a month. You probably do as well.
Yeah.
And then, depending on the organization, we have a 13th or a 14th salary. So if it's 13, then it's usually at the end of November, beginning of December, basically Weihnachtsgeld, so Christmas money. And if
like
the organization... Yes, exactly. It's like a bonus. And if the organization offers 14 salaries, then you have the Christmas bonus, so das Weihnachtsgeld, and then ein Urlaubsgeld, the vacation money, which usually comes at the beginning of summer.
Yeah, I know that. I think that does exist, but I work at a private kindergarten, and that's not really a money flow job. So we're not really getting many bonuses, but I do get I do get 6 weeks holiday. Yeah, so that's nice.
That's nice. By American standards, absolutely crazy, right? 6 weeks of vacation. That's just unheard
and paid holiday. I think that's the biggest thing too. It's not unpaid, it's 100% paid.
It's awesome.
And that blew my mind. And also sick days too blew my mind as well. The first time I was sick here, my colleagues were like, hey, take the day off, you know, call in sick. I was like, yeah, but like, I'm fine. Like, no, like you're sick. Don't come in. Don't get me sick. Don't get the kids sick. But I was, you know, stressing out about it. She's like, go home. You're getting paid. Really, don't worry about it. And that was kind of the moment I realized like, oh, okay, things were the work. What's it called? The workers' rights here are really, really solid.
Did you feel any pressure? Did you feel any pressure to come back as fast as possible?
I think my Americanness in me wanted to, but if I came back one time and I was still a bit like sniffly, and they're like, "Go home." Like, all right then.
Why are you here?
Why are you here? So I find that really like that really blew my mind at first. Unfortunately, I'm not that sick, so I can't take advantage of it.
Jeff, what blew your mind?
About Germany, you mean?
About Germany, yeah.
Oh God, there's just so much. It's so hard to pick one thing. Oh man, lots of mind blowers. Lots of mind blowers. God, there's also just like really small basic things that will blow your mind. And I mean, just being able to drink in public will blow your mind, especially when you're younger, will blow your, I mean, things like which it sounds like an insignificant thing, but there's such a huge culture here of, I mean, on a nice day, what do? Like, you go to the park and you go to Späti and you grab some beers with your friends and you go drink at the park, which sounds like such a natural thing. And it actually bums me out to know that in the US you can't do that, because it seems like, why can't a grown adult go have some wine in the park?
On your way to a movie, like, hey, it's a 10-minute walk to the movie, let's have a beer on the way. It's nice. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, they have Fußpilz. That's what they have. They have words Fußpilz. For. Like, they have words for these things. Like
Wegbier.
Yeah, Wegbier. Yeah. So I think the thing, a lot about the drinking. Even God, when I was 18 and I came to Germany for the first time, and I realized there's a thing called a beer garden. flipped out. Like, I mean, which sounds like such a basic thing, but yeah, there's always this. The drinking culture is very different, especially if you live in Bavaria. Oh my God. I mean, I remember you'd go out on Wednesdays and just have a beer at lunch, just because, like, oh, it's hump day, it's, you know, it's Mittwoch, you know, or they'll give you time off to go to Oktoberfest. Like, oh, no, go ahead, go to Oktoberfest. You know, you come back in the evening. You know,
yeah, it kind of on that vein of what's kind of weird is I feel much as a personal human, I feel much more free. I feel a lot more freedom living in Germany than I did in the States.
But that could be a Berlin thing.
Maybe which could be a Berlin thing.
A small German village might be different.
Yeah. It could be, but I definitely feel like I'm not as policed here, which you wouldn't expect, I think, from like the stereotypes of like land of the free and like Germany, the former Stasi country, you know? But I definitely do feel way more personal freedoms here. Mm.
You know, what really stands out to me is just your enthusiasm. It's even though we are separated by thousands upon thousands of miles and a Zoom connection, it's I feel it. And it makes me incredibly happy. But my question then also would be, does the perhaps German perspective of the U.S. damper your enthusiasm a little bit?
Also depends when. I mean, I think up until this last January, the German perspective was was different than it is now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, I remember back in 2005, first time I was here, it was also under the Bush era, you know, freshly in Iraq. You know, you were given a lot of questions by Germans, you know, who were asking, but basically trying to ask you to explain yourself, even though it's like, oh no, I didn't invade Iraq. I wasn't even there, you know. Under Trump, definitely the view of Americans got very, very low, and it does affect their view of you as well. Like when they meet you and they find out you're an American, I feel like you kind of have a tiny uphill battle to prove, no, I am not the kind of whatever the image is in your head that you are upset with, like, that's not me.
Yeah.
So you kind of start at a low place and kind of have to prove yourself. But it's a nice little challenge. Like, it's not that, you know.
Yeah, I don't feel like it affected me too much because, like you said, I'm very passionate about living here, and I'm trying to like germify myself as much as I can. Like, I want to be, you know, one of the Germans. But at the same time, Germans, I've noticed, are just generally very intelligent people. They know a lot of what's happening around the world.
Yeah.
And so they don't really look at things in a black and white perspective. They see things have nuance. And I found that when I meet people, it's more of an interest of like, what does your family think of this? What do your friends think of this? As opposed to, you are like this, your country's like this, it's terrible. I mean, you do get that as well, because sometimes I think that too, to be fair. I still love the United States, of course I do, but sometimes I'm like, just like, what are you doing? But I do think that Germans, because they are very well-educated people, stereotypes don't really fall as hard on them.
It depends who you're talking to.
I guess it always depends who you're talking to, of course, but just in my experience, at least.
Let's see. I have a list of but Gunter has like amazing questions.
I'm just rolling with the whiskey.
I think one of the things that I appreciate a lot about your podcast is you know, you have a lot of practical advice for people who are expats, but you also have amazing observations, I feel like, for that bring back all kinds of memories from when I lived there. Like, I feel like in one episode I listened to, you were kind of riffing on like bathrooms and like how bathrooms are like.
We do a lot of bathroom stuff. Yeah.
How they're like constructed and like there's etiquette. And I just feel like it's so unique and refreshing to like hear that on a podcast. Cause like, I feel like nothing you've said has been like wrong. And then there's something it's funny. Cause a couple weeks ago I wrote this and I wrote pants. Cause I was like, I felt like my American guy friends in Germany were like, we can't find pants. We like don't understand the pants. And then like, you guys were talking about pants like last week or something. So I feel like from like, you know, these big picture questions down to these like literally what is like the stuff in your daily life are so insightful on your show. And they're also pretty hilarious.
Thank you. I mean, the big and small hits you daily. So like, it's impossible not to talk about it all, right?
And also like after 70 something episodes, you know, you start off with the big things and then we need more ideas so that we get it smaller and smaller. Yeah.
So I wanted to ask actually, that was a really long intro to like, I want to ask you about some small things. What is like iPhone etiquette like? So like when I lived there, it was pre-smartphones, like you know, texts on your phone with like the numbers, like they were like little Nokia phones.
Little T9s, like half an hour to write one sentence. Yeah.
Right. You're like, I can't, why is this German word so long? Like,
true. German and T9 sounds awful, right?
So trying
to figure out how to umlaut on your Nokia old flip phone. Yeah.
So bad. But yeah, what is like the phone culture like? Because I feel like, is it rude to take out your phone when you're like out with your friends? Or are people like, WhatsApping? Are they iMessaging? I also feel like no one would call me because it costs like Guthaben. Like, is it still like that? Like, do your friends like not call you? Like,
I mean, I guess with WhatsApp now, people a lot of times call through WhatsApp because it's, you know, through data,
through Wi-Fi. Yeah.
But definitely WhatsApp is way bigger. iMessage is, I've never seen anyone use anything except for WhatsApp and maybe Signal and sometimes Telegram.
Yeah.
But I also think the etiquette is, this could also just be because I'm older now. When I was younger in the States, people were on their phones all the time. But I know when I went to dinner, when we're out, like every once in a while, maybe someone might look at their phone, but usually they're kind of in the pockets, in the bag, under the table, and you just hang out with each other. And at the end of the night, you send all the photos. I mean, for photos, yeah. Then at the end of the night, you send some photos to each other. But yeah.
I'll be honest, I noticed it more that, at least for me, what's common is at dinner or wherever, everybody actually, they put their phone on the table. Like, I think you do it as well. Like, everybody puts their phone on the table in front of them, like next to their glass, and they don't really necessarily touch it, but it's there. And I think for a lot of people, at least for me, it's because it sits in my back pocket. And when I sit on it, it just feels uncomfortable and I have nowhere else to put it. So I don't like putting it on the table, but yeah, you will see people eating and there's like five phones on the table. And of course you'll all the time see like 5 20-year-olds out to brunch, every single one of them's on their phone. But
yeah, I noticed the younger people are definitely on their phone more often. But I think the people, I don't know, I honestly, it's hard to say because I haven't been in the States in 3 years now, to be honest, because of COVID. So it's been kind of difficult to compare at this point, but at least people I know, phones usually away. I just want to point out, your phone's on the table, mine's in my pocket. I'm just saying.
Okay, but normally we're podcasting, your phone's on the table, mine's in my pocket.
Well, it's got a timer on.
Yeah. Also, one more little question. Do you still have landlines? Because like everyone in America is like getting rid of their landline. Do you have a landline?
I never had one. I know my girlfriend's parents do. I think, yeah, they have one, but I don't think anyone under the age of like 50 or 60 have one.
It's just like an added cost.
I didn't say 40.
Yeah. It's just an added cost you don't need. I mean, even my dad, who loved his landline, he got rid of it 5 years ago because he's like, why am I paying for this and my cell phone?
Yeah, I think the big thing is just trying to get a cell phone plan with as much data. No one pays attention to minutes or SMS. It's just like, if you have data, you have WhatsApp, you're good for a while.
Sure.
Yeah.
Public Wi-Fi, is that available in Germany or is it locked down? In the US, obviously, you go to Starbucks, McDonald's, drive-thrus, what have you, there's Wi-Fi basically everywhere. How is it?
It's getting there, but it still kind of feels like 2007 vibes.
It's hit or miss. I mean, also a lot of places you go, they'll have Wi-Fi, but you have to order something in order to get the Wi-Fi password. You know, a lot of times it's actually on the bottom of the receipt. So like you have to buy the coffee or the beer But yeah, I'd say it's more on the rare side that you're gonna go to a place and there's just free Wi-Fi for you to easily connect to.
Definitely, yeah. It's definitely way more rare. And also there's not as many, you know, Starbucks around, which I like. It's a lot of small coffee shops. They might have their own little Wi-Fi, but I've been to a few coffee shops that don't allow you to bring even laptops, actually. So I find that kind of interesting too.
Yeah.
Our coffee culture is stronger, I would say.
Yeah, you come here to drink coffee, talk to your friends. I saw a few signs like, please do not bring a laptop. If you have a laptop, you will get kicked out of the cafe. And as an American, I was like, isn't that the point of cafes? To be on your laptop?
But there's also, in Berlin, there's also a lot of coffee shops that are purely for that. A freelancer, knowing a lot of
people. It's like one or the other.
Yeah, there's some coffee shops to go to and every person's on their laptop and they're, web developing their website or doing whatever, and they're fine as long as you order one thing, they'll let you sit there all day, basically.
Especially in the areas, especially like in Berlin, where a lot of the startups are, you'll see a lot of these cafes, all the startup people doing their startup things.
You know, one of the things that I remember still is, my gosh, it was about 2015, I want to say. I was back home in Vienna and met up with my dad, who had some errand to run. We met up at a coffee shop, and I do the typical American thing. I ordered a coffee, and we sit down. We get served in the typical Viennese way. And the next thing you know is I'm just whipping out plastic. And that got me exactly nowhere. I got sort of a raised eyebrow, as in, what is this? Where's the cash? Right. Cash or plastic? What's it like right now?
Ooh, I'll tell you, Germany in terms of payments is stuck in 1984. I mean, they hate cards. They want their cash. It's only started changing recently because of COVID, and they didn't want to touch the cash. So actually, I saw shops here suddenly they had a card terminal. But again, it was just because of Corona.
Yeah.
That has been a huge problem the entire time I've lived here. I mean, you'll go to nice restaurants, you know, 30 euro per person. And when you pull out a card, they look at you like you're crazy. And it's like, but the bill's 90. How am I going to pay? And they make you go walk in the snow to the nearest ATM. It makes no sense. But they are slowly getting better. We're at a point where I have noticed a huge change in the past 2 years, I'd say.
Yeah, Corona definitely added a lot of, I mean, my local Spezi, which is like for people without Berlin, it's like a kiosk or like a
7-Eleven,
a convenience store. Yeah. They never, ever, ever take cards, like ever. And the one near me now takes cards, and I found that mind blowing. So definitely, like a few of my bars I go to now take cards, and that was also very new. So I think because of COVID, it's definitely more there. I'm wondering if it goes away, if they get rid of it again, because Germans, I'm assuming Austrians as well, are like really hardcore with their Datenschutz, their data protection. And that's why they don't like cards. You know, cash is, you can't trace cash. Yeah.
Well, also, I think a contributing factor is you're looking at 21% VAT, right? So 21% tax on top of what you're buying. So with the adage of credit card processing fees, you're very quickly at 24, 25%, depending on the card issuer, whether that's Visa or Amex, where Amex is traditionally the more expensive one. And I think if that money were to be rolled, or that amount were to be rolled back to the customer would probably just have a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction.
That's a good point, man.
Yeah, it's true. But yeah, I think a lot of people do forget, like, in order to actually accept cards, you have to get a merchant account, and you got to get the actual terminal, and, you know, there's a subscription and all this. I get for a small place.
Yeah.
It can be annoying, but all I know is, like, a few years ago, when I went to Russia, to Moscow, and there was a guy with a hot dog cart, and he accepts cards for a dollar hot dog. So, and I was like, how is Russia like 20 years ahead of Germany? Because I mean, Germany's supposed to be this technologically advanced country, but they hate. I think they also just like, they're just bad with technological changes. But
no, they're bad with any kind of change. Yeah. Germans don't like change.
Yeah,
they want things to stay the same, and that's how it's supposed to be.
But Corona, I think Corona was if there's one positive thing, if there's any positive thing from Corona, is it forced them to do this change.
Yeah.
It wasn't their choice. And over a 2 year period, they got used to it. And so more and more people, I think, not only are using cards, but they are switching to the cards with the contactless.
I'm using Apple Pay on my phone like a lot recently. And I feel like I'm in the future. My friends back in 2013 in the States are like, yeah, man, we've been using that for years. Like, well, it's really cool to me here, okay?
And recently, even the trams in Berlin, which like famously only accepted coins.
Only coins.
Which you need like €8 worth of coins, which nobody ever had. suddenly, a few months ago, the machines I saw, they're getting replaced with digital ones that accept cards and PayPal. And I was like, oh my God, this is insane.
Yeah. With cash, I knew how much money I was spending all the time. Now I have
With cards, you literally have an exact overview because you can just look at your bank account and it shows you exactly what
But
you
I gotta look.
Yeah, but actually it has a better overview than remembering with cash.
If I have cash in hand, I know how much money I'm spending and what's all going. I'm like, great, right, I spent, you know, that much money.
You're not so gonna win this argument.
We are located in Minnesota, right? So for instance, no tax on clothing. Mm-hmm. And conversely, when we go to the grocery store, usually we have tax at about 7%, depending on what we're buying. Let's just put it that way. 7.5%.
That's about an average, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I think it's an average for the U.S., about 7-8%.
Yeah, something like that. Depending on California, a little bit higher, Nevada, a little bit higher. What's the taxation perspective? The contribution to the government, the contribution to Big Brother, if you will, that if we rolled 21% out in the U.S., we'd have a mutiny, regardless of what the funds would actually be used for. What is the perception like in Germany?
Yeah, absolutely.
What's it like in Germany?
If you go to a supermarket here, I think it's also 7%. It's 19% if you go to a store and you buy batteries or what have you, but I'm pretty sure supermarket like food is 7%,
and it's all included in the price. So I don't even know. The price is €20. €20. I'm not really sure how much tax I'm paying. I know with technology, it's always more expensive than in the States. But
it's things like if you buy something, it's 99 cents. It's 99 cents. You don't have to like think, oh, okay, is it going to end up being $1.25? It's actually kind of easier to pay for things with cash.
I just don't think about it. I mean, in terms of like income tax and everything else, like all the mass amounts of taxes that we pay here.
Yeah, that's a different story.
I personally don't mind paying the mass amounts of taxes that we do pay here in Germany, because I know I can see that money kind of coming back to me with the infrastructure and the healthcare and, you know, the Kindergeld and, you know, and I don't mind, you know, paying it forward. I kind of feel like that's a form of patriotism in a way in Germany, is paying for those taxes. So for me, I really don't mind it. And, you know, I make enough money to be able to live comfortably. And I know if I lose my job, that I will be getting money from the government to take care of me. I know things are really bad, I'll get housing. I know things are really bad, I'll be taken care of. And in that way, I really don't mind paying for those taxes. I know a lot of Americans might be like head being exploding right now, but I'm happy to pay my taxes to Mutti, to Angela.
So only for
the next 25 days.
Yeah. So can I pitch a cliffhanger to the two of you? Because we've been rolling for an hour 10 roughly. And I think cliffhanging here on the idea of taxation and what it means in Germany versus the US, the unwritten social contract, if you will, I think would be an incredible conversation to continue, provided we can convince you to go on the air with us again.
Oh yeah, we're coming back.
100%. I'm having a great time.
Yeah, no problem. We'll be back. Ooh, the taxation.
I love the cliffhanger. That's fun.
Yeah, so let's cliffhang. Yeah, let's cliffhang on that one.
I absolutely have a rebuttal to Alex.
Oh yeah, he feels totally
annoyed. I do not agree with what he just said, so I have to come back just for that. So
I'm a little more commie than him, though.
Jeff, Alex, round one, Teil 1. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having us.
This was